you're here. Fellowship sweeter, knowing you're near.
Magnify the Lord with me. Let us exalt His name together. It's Friday, September 28th, 2018, the last Friday in this month. In fact, Jason, come, what is it, Monday? It'll be October.
It's amazing. We had the first couple nights the other night that felt like October nights. I mean, it got down to like in the 50s, I remember I opened the windows because my wife said, it's going to be cool tonight. So I opened the windows, and when I woke up in the morning, I had like the blanket wrapped around my head, and I was just like, so warm. And then I peeled back the covers, and my teeth were like chattering. It was so cold, and I was like, this is awesome. Love it. I love that kind of weather. I love good fall weather. So
that's upon us. I don't know.
There's pumpkins all over, and the pumpkins look really good, and I'm like, I just love the fall. And so it would be kind of interesting. We're this great fall weather is kind of setting in, and then we're going to head to Israel where it is summer. It is hot.
70s, 80s.
Yeah,
I don't think
hot.
It'll get into the 90s, but it'll be very warm. And, that's happening. Joey Kroll actually is going to be hosting Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday's program next week. And you're going to be doing a special series. So more to say about that in the coming days. And I'm not ready, if you were tuned in for the Wednesday edition of Market Friends, to disclose all that's going to be going on in the days ahead, but we feel God's stirring up something new. It's exciting.
This has really taken a lot. I mean, you might even need counseling after this. I mean, the restraint that you're showing, it's amazing.
I know. The blood pressure is like building, and it's wanting to come out.
How did you ever keep a secret when you were a kid?
I don't know. Well, these are like God-honoring secrets that I want to just share, so it's not like anything that, I mean, there's things that I can certainly keep as a secret and not disclose, but when I feel God's doing something, I kind of get overwhelmed, and I can't wait to share it, and I want to share it. I want to include people in it and talk about it, but probably on the Monday edition of Mark and Friends. So again, if you were tuned in Wednesday, continue to be praying that we'll sense and understand and discern God's leading, that we won't go forward without His approval, and that we'll walk in step with His Spirit's leading, and that if, in fact, this is His will and His plan, then I can't even wait to talk about it and then see how He brings fruit, it bears fruit, and blesses so many different people in so many different ways. So maybe on the Monday edition of Mark and Friends, you should tune in. But today, being Friday, our tendency is to read through the book of Exodus.
Forever.
We're in, is it 13?
12.
12. Oh, yeah, 12. And I'm going to begin reading at verse 37.
37.
Okay. The Israelites. Starting at verse 37 of Exodus chapter 12, the Israelites journeyed from Ramses to Succoth. There were about 600,000 men on foot, besides women and children. Many other people went up with them, as well as large droves of the livestock, both flocks and herds. We'll just stop there. Here we are in chapter 12 of Exodus. The big Exodus has taken place. Pharaoh's finally relented. There was the terrible firstborn children. And firstborn, was it just the cattle or animals? I'm not sure.
It was livestock.
Livestock, death, and finally relented. Finally was, I don't know if he's broken enough because he's still going to make some senseless decisions and doesn't quite get it. Even after 10 plagues and the 10th being the worst, he still doesn't quite get it. But the people are beginning to now mobilize to leave.
This is a great passage. Well, for a number of reasons. But a lot of people would read this beginning in 37 because Pharaoh has relented. Pharaoh has said, get out of my sight. But remember what he says. As he does it, we still get a hint of that pride. That pride has not fully left him. And bless me also. He says that back up in verse 32. Take your flocks and your herds as you have said and be gone and bless me also. So, there's still that pride. There's still, I'm in control. I'm the king. I'm the one in charge. I'm letting you go, but it's not because I'm humbling myself before the Lord. It's because I'm letting you go. So you need to give me something in return. You need to bless me. And then we get to verse 37, and we would think, well, this is a transition passage. So this is going to get us to the next events that are going to happen. But this is not a transition passage. This is the culmination of 12 and a half verses. It says, and the people of Israel journeyed from Ramses to Succoth. The people of Israel are leaving Egypt. This is the very thing that God has been talking about since the Exodus started out. This is the redeeming hand of God coming to save his people, to bring them out of the yoke of slavery. This is God doing what he said he would do. And so you can't underscore this. This has been anticipated since Exodus began. Israel is now free. Pharaoh and his armies are no longer holding them back. And it says that they traveled from their center of Ramses to Succoth. Now, Succoth is interesting because that word means shelters. Hmm. And there is a festival, a feast that happens, the Feast of Booths, the Feast of Succoth in Israel, where they remember this time in the wilderness and they eat sweet cakes. And they build little temporary shelters that they go in and they eat these little cakes.
And they still do it to this day.
They still do
it to
this day. In
fact, you'll see some of the apartment building complexes, they'll put that little shelter, that Sukkot, on their balcony.
Yeah.
Or sometimes it's in the
yard. I saw one the other day where a guy had built one. It looked like it was out of PVC pipe, but it had a thatched roof. And he had little wheels on the bottom, and he was holding it, and he had roller skates, and he was roller skating down the road in his booth. And it was kind of a funny little video. I don't forget who posted that, Kathleen Jennings or somebody did, but it was pretty funny to see. But imagine this place, Succoth. Now, this is the festival that they celebrate. They celebrate remembering this moment. And this was a temporary encampment. They went from Ramses to the place called Succoth, and they made a temporary encampment for the night. And what's interesting is you have to think about in Succoth, what was life like that night? I mean, imagine the tension. We just escaped. Are they going to come get us? Is Pharaoh really going to let us go? Is the promised freedom from slavery that we've been hearing about, is it really true? Are we no longer slaves and now we're free people? And what does it mean to be a free person? Because we've never been free. We don't even know what that means. And so you have this moment where because of the freedom and no longer being slaves, there was probably these huge celebrations. But at the same time, there was probably a fair degree of tension. What next? What's going to happen?
Yeah.
I read a book a number of years ago written by an African man who was in the South, and when the Emancipation Proclamation happened, he became a freedman. And he said, the scariest thing that I have had happen to me in my life was not when I was captured in the Ivory Coast and sold into slavery. It was not when I was brought to the farm and put to work and over my task and didn't know what was happening. And I had these taskmasters. He said, the scariest, most fearful thing in my life was when I became free, because all I knew how to be was a slave. Mm. All I knew how to do was live like that. And so now I don't know what it means to live free. And so these people, there's a celebration, we're free, but at the same time there's this tension. What does it mean to be free?
I think you shared at our Israel night, but one of your favorite books being Leviticus, and everyone's like, what? And you said, because it's kind of a manual of freedom.
It is.
In a sense, or a training manual or something. I mean, it was kind of interesting because no one would think that. You'd think, oh, it's rules, it's these awkward or...
Somebody told me that years ago, and when they told me that, it released me to love the book of Leviticus like I don't think I ever could have. I always looked at the book of Leviticus in the past like a lot of people did, like, oh my gosh, look at all the rules and all this stuff and all the steps and all these things that happen. How do you even read the book of Leviticus? And when somebody said the book of Leviticus, you have to come to it realizing that this is all about how do people who were once slaves now live free. And once I heard that, I go, oh, every verse I read, I need to say, how is this a slave being taught what it means to be free? And when we say free, we don't mean free like we think freedom in America, where I get to do whatever I want and I have all these rights and I get to enjoy all this. It's how do I be free in the freedom that God gives me, the freedom that God gives me? Mm-hmm. Because the freedom that God gives you does not allow you to do whatever you want. He's very specific about what you can and you cannot do. And for those of us who are trying to follow the Lord Jesus Christ, let's just be honest. Those things that he tells us we cannot do are not easy things. You know, some of them are. You know, we go to Ephesians and we read the list and, you know, sensuality, immorality, all these kinds of things, you know, orgies, that kind of stuff. You're like, oh, man, that's not me. I'm not doing any of that. Thank goodness I'm living well. And then, you know, you get to the latter half of chapter 3 and it says, you know, gossip, slander, rude talk, crude jokes. And all of a sudden you're like, no, oh man, he got me. You know, because God says, no, it's this and this here. And I want you to know that because this is what it means to live free. This is what it means to truly be free, because if not, you are a slave to sin somehow.
Well, I'm also thinking, don't children thrive most when there's boundaries? And so Leviticus, yep, in a sense, are those boundaries from these people that have been slaves, you know, mistreated, mm-hmm, and didn't have the freedoms. And so it's kind of like a manual, an instruction book to live in freedom. Yeah. And so, yeah, I just thought that was interesting when you were saying that, because many of us would look at Leviticus and say, oh, gosh, all these rules. But that would be a good one in about 10 days to ask Moshe.
Yeah. You know, I got a couple questions I have to ask him.
Okay, yeah.
I have a couple questions that I have to ask him, and I want to see his answers.
Okay.
I got a list.
Okay.
But this is fascinating. And then it says about 600,000 men on foot besides the women and children.
Yeah, yeah.
So this is what I think is made me think. This would be messy. This would be chaotic. This would be not clean. There are 600,000 men, and then there's women and children. Now, Israelites had a lot of children. They say this could be upwards to 1 million people. There are at least 1 million people in Sukkoth camping out who have made their way out of Egypt who are celebrating, not to mention there are Egyptians. There are foreigners in this. There is the cattle and livestock. It wasn't just the Israelites that left Egypt that night. It was the Egyptians who had seen the God of Israel in his power and his glory and decided that that God was far more worth their praise, mm-hmm, and worth their worship than Pharaoh was. And so they left also. But it made me think about how God's redeeming work is not clean. You know, just imagine, and what do we try and do? We try and clean it up, don't we? This next weekend at our church, we're going to have a bunch of baptisms. And I was thinking about this the other day, that when we do the baptisms, you know, we bring in the baptismal tank and we clean it all up, and we got a nice thing that we put around the tank so it looks nice, and we got magnets that hook it up, and, you know, we've got this magnet at every foot you put around there so it stays on there nice, and we lay plastic down underneath the tank so the floor doesn't get wet, and we have towels and we have all this kind of stuff, and we lay it all out so nice and neat so that we can present in a very clean fashion God's redeeming work. Mm-hmm. And no matter how well we clean all that up, when the first person leaps out of the water, water goes everywhere. It's a mess. No matter how I try and keep myself, I'm still at the end of that thing. I got water all over the front of my shirt. I got water all over my arms. I mean, God's redeeming work is messy. And here it's messy. There's 600,000 people. There are people who are not Israelites who I got to think are like, we don't know. We're just here because we think your God's mighty. And the Israelites are like, yeah, but you don't even know who he is. I know we don't know who he is. What are we doing? We're building shelters. We're eating sweet cakes. What are we doing? I'm not quite sure. Sukkoth, excellent. This sounds like a good idea. All we know is we're following your God. I talked about on Wednesday that guy who prayed, and he goes, you know, God, you're awesome. And a lot of people would think that's messy. That was messy what he did when he prayed that way, when he prayed this honest kind of gut level, God, I think you're awesome prayer. But you know what? We're all in different places and coming along. And so God's redeeming work is at times messy. And this is messy. This is 1 million people, plus people who don't really know who God is, but has been convinced by his mighty works that he is worth following. And it says this mixed multitude went up with them, and very much livestock, both flocks and herds. So there's a lot of animals. And they baked unleavened cakes of dough that they had brought out of Egypt. For it was not leavened, because they were thrust out of Egypt and could not wait. So they couldn't wait for it to rise, nor had they prepared any provisions for themselves. And so this was sudden. They didn't expect it, but God provided for them. The time that the people of Israel lived in Egypt was 430 years. At the end of the 430 years, on that very day, on this very day, this very day in history, it's a real day in history. If you go, boy, I don't know, is God at work? Is God working? Is God ever at work? On this very day. Sometimes I think that what we need to do is, and this is why I think journaling is so important. I think it's so important. I have a calendar and a date book, and a lot of people will say, gosh, you know, you got to have the date book to keep all your stuff in lined up. And I said, yeah, I do. I mean, that it serves me well that way. But one of the reasons I have a date book is because when God does something, I write it down in there. So I can remember that on this very day, God did this thing. And so I can look back, because a lot of times we get fearful. We wonder what's going to happen when we step out in faith. or when God redeems us and moves us forward, we wonder what's life going to be like now. And we need to lean back on the track record that God had where of his faithfulness, that he has been continually faithful. This isn't just all of a sudden he became faithful. He has been faithful.
Mm-hmm.
At the end of the 400th years, on that very day, all the host of the Lord went out from the land of Egypt. It was a night of watching by the Lord to bring them out of the land of Egypt. So that same night is a night of watching kept to the Lord by all the people of Israel throughout their generations. This is such a great verse right here. It is so great. Oh, it makes me want to pause and just close my eyes and think about this. Listen, this is a night of watching by the Lord. The Lord watched his people like a father watches his children take their first steps, like a father watches their children take their first words, like a father watches their child walk down the graduation aisle. The Lord was watching his children coming out of captivity and going into freedom. As the father watched Jesus on the cross, and at that moment, you know, Eli, 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 and his blood was shed and he gave up his ghost. In that moment, the Father watched all sin, past, present, and future, being put on the Son, and the captives being able to go free. In that moment. And then he says here that this is a night of watching kept to the Lord by all the people. That's a fascinating passage. It really is.
Yeah, and the NIV rendering, because some people may be listening are a little confused, but NIV renders it, because the Lord kept vigil that night to bring them out of Egypt.
Yeah.
So just to make sure that the Lord himself, he's keeping the vigil.
Yeah.
It's just amazing.
So fast forward to the Garden of Gethsemane. Fast forward to Jesus when he prays in the Garden of Gethsemane. What does Jesus say? I'm in Mark chapter 14. And Jesus says, and when they went out to a place called Gethsemane, he said to his disciples, sit here while I pray. And he took with him Peter and James and John and began to be greatly distressed and troubled. And he said to them, my soul is very sorrowful, even to death.
Hmm.
Remain here and watch.
Hmm.
Now, why were they to remain there and watch? Because this night, remember, this is the night of the Passover. This night that the Israelites are leaving out of Egypt is the night of the Passover. This is the night where they've taken it. The angel of death has passed over. Jesus and his disciples have taken the Passover meal together. The angel of death is going to pass over. The people are commanded here, as God watches the events unfold, they're commanded also throughout the generations to watch. Jesus commands his disciples to watch. Watch what? What God is going to do.
Hmm.
This is a practice. They call it watching on the night of the Passover, where they watch. What is God up to? What is God doing? And so here in the Exodus, this is something that is not just a trivial command. Oh, I mean, if you feel like watching, then watch. If you have time, watch, then watch. No, this is a practice that the Lord Jesus Christ, when he was getting ready to pray in the Garden of Gethsemane, he held this forward from Exodus and commanded his disciples to do the same, to watch what the Lord is about to do. And so much of our time, I think, we spend not watching what God is doing, not watching what God is up to, having our eyes on everything but what the Lord is doing. And yet the Bible tells us very clearly the Lord is always watching. He is continually watching. He sees all things. Nothing escapes his gaze. He watches with bated breath, wondering what his people will do. And so it says, kept to the Lord by all the people of Israel throughout their generations. And so we had this amazing moment where the people are camped out, over a million of them, those who know God, those who are learning about God, those who have just accepted God, those who aren't sure what's going on, those who brought their cattle and their livestock, people who were Egyptians, who worshipped Pharaoh all their life, and now they've seen a God who is more worthy of their praise than some human, faulty, prideful God. And in this moment, they're in these little temporary shelters in Sukkoth, and they're eating sweet cakes, and they're celebrating. But at the same time, they're watching, and they're a little tense, and they're wondering. And it feels very much like Jesus in the garden, doesn't it? Doesn't it? They've just celebrated. They've just sang a hymn. They've just come out from the Passover meal, and Jesus says, things are a little tense. I'm sorrowful. I don't know how this is going to work out. I need you men to watch what God is going to do. Because he's up to something always and continually. and you need to see it so that you might testify to it. And this is going to lead us in the Exodus into the parting of the Red Sea and God's people triumphantly and victoriously moving across the sea, not by their strength, but by God's strength. Because he was watching, and they were commanded to watch too.
This verse 42, I want to close out with it. Because the Lord kept vigil that night to bring them out of Egypt. So we all can picture that. God's overseeing this whole miraculous exodus out of Egypt. You know, so we're picturing that. God's in control. God's watching out. God's protecting them. And then it says, on this night, all the Israelites are to keep vigil to honor the Lord for the generations to come. And I know we spent like 3 or 4 weeks talking about the Passover meal and what it represents and all that. Isn't this another part of the Israelites, the Jewish people, having to keep vigil to remember, remembering for the generations to come, to keep vigil? So they're to do what God did on their behalf, to watch
out? It's a cornerstone of the Passover meal, is to remember. Why do we do these things? To remember. Why do we tell these stories? To remember. Why? Because it is so easy to forget God. And we must not forget his mighty works, because once we forget God's mighty works, we start to become enamored with our own.
And was it this program, or is that a Wednesday? There's a blurring. I've lived so much life in the last few days. But we talked about where, you know, God sings over us. That's in the Psalms, which is an incredible. If you just chewed on that all day long, you could be pretty content. The fact that Almighty Sovereign God, the creator of the universe, the creator of you, sings over you. It's kind of even hard to even imagine that God sings over me.
It is, because he doesn't have to.
But yet also he keeps a vigil. He watches over each and every one of us. Mm. How he can do it, because he's so amazing and grand and glorious. How he can keep track of everyone, and yet how also he's personalized. He keeps track over you. He watches over you. He's that personally involved. So he watches over us. He sings over us. He blesses us. What an incredible God that we have the opportunity to serve, to worship, to praise, to get to know in a personal way.
He's worthy of all that praise, and therefore give it to him today. Doesn't matter how you come to him. It's that you do come to him. Hmm. It'll be messy. Might be a little crowded. Might be difficult. But come to him, because he's worthy of it.
And if that's a somewhat foreign concept to you, you've never entertained the idea that you can have a relationship with God, there's some great folks that can talk you through how it looks, what it means to follow Jesus, to know God in a personal way. You can dial 1-888-NEED-HIM. That's 1-888-NEED-HIM. It's a free call, and they can pray with you, talk with you, answer your questions about the Bible. They're great folks, and they will take your call anytime. 1-888-NEED-HIM. Well, thanks for listening. Thanks for being a part of this radio listening family. This is Mark Burns and Pastor Jason Schiffel with the Ministry of Great News Radio. God bless you, and have a great day, night, and weekend.